We built this city.
SimCity. It's Amigos, episode 302. Hi, everybody. Welcome to Amigos. I'm John.
And I'm appalled.
And today, Aaron, we're going to be talking about SimCity. Now, okay. Aaron, are you a city boy or a country boy?
I've lived in both, I think. Well, it depends on what you would count as a city, but I think I'm both. Mm-hmm. But I prefer the country life boat.
Yeah, yeah. You know, your hatred of most metropolitan areas knows no bounds. Let's tick them off, shall we? Chicago, Washington, D.C., New York City. What else have I left
Philly,
out?
Cleveland, Philly, Cincinnati.
Cincinnati.
Yeah.
The Renaissance Fair left you cold.
Winston-Salem. I don't like that place either. So, that clicks off the majority of them, both.
Yeah, yeah. You know, I'm a city person in my mind, but as soon as I actually go to the city and I experience the city traffic, I become a country boy once again.
Yeah.
About living here is when you go out, you go to the place. You don't sit in traffic for an hour and a half before you get to the place.
It's funny.
When you
want
to go out to eat,
boat.
You walk right in. You sit down. You eat. You don't wait around for a couple hours. It's great.
Yeah. Except that's totally wrong. I just waited in traffic for a half hour to get here. So I told you.
A half an hour. Boy, you have been in the country for a long time.
Well, listen, it's not Washington, D.C. I'm not going to lie to you. But it's, listen, I lived in Lexington, which is a very small city, and it had unbelievable traffic. You know, going anywhere in a city, Columbus is a great example, because it has a ton of traffic for a moderately sized city.
Columbus is a lot bigger than Lexington. But
People tell me, you work 40 miles from your house. Yeah, I get there in 40 minutes.
Right.
Not too bad.
That's just how it goes. Yeah, and that's a good commute. That's not bad. All right, Aaron, we're going to dive right in to this week's Amiga News. Let's do it, man.
Amiga News. Gamble Train.
Right off the bat, Aaron, we have a project update from our buddy Ravi Abbott from the Retro Hour. He has been hard at work for the past couple of years building his own custom laptop using an Amiga 600 motherboard.
Yes. Oh, I forgot about this. The wooden one.
That's right. The wooden one. This thing, he's made all kinds of custom adjustments and things. I mean, he's really doing everything he can to cram everything he needs into this little box. Well, there's a pretty major update that he's announced at the beginning of this video. He's actually going to jettison the wood case.
Oh!
And he's going all Lego, Aaron, all Lego. A Lego Amiga 600 laptop. What do you think about that?
Well, I will say that's a direction I didn't see it going.
Yeah.
You know, it's funny, in the time he's been working on this, right? Because I said here before me, Boat, is a beautiful 3D printed case for my mister. And I love this thing. Our good buddy Dave did this. And so, but Ravi has been working on this stuff for so long that I'd never heard of a 3D printed case when he started. So when he put this in a wooden case, it seemed perfectly viable. It's like, case. So when you tell me he's switching up to Lego, that doesn't surprise me that much, but I have to say, I'm looking forward to see what that looks like. I've seen a few Lego cases over the years, and I think it will probably, it'll probably be lighter than the wood, maybe. It'll probably be more durable than the wood, maybe. It'll probably look pretty cool.
It'll definitely look cool. This particular video, though, isn't about the Lego case. It's about his custom power solution, which it's wacky. I'll tell you that, Aaron. He's got a custom battery with all kinds of custom wiring and things.
Yeah, I'm looking at this. You know, I love Ravi, but clearly he's out of his mind. I can't wait to see this thing finished. I'm dying to see it. I'm sort of sad. You know, the Brent made a wooden computer one time. I'm sure you've heard about this thing. I had it for old Woody. He made his own custom box for a PC motherboard, and he built the joystick that attached to the top of it. It was his portable arcade machine. And this thing, and that's why the Robbie's project, it reminds me of the Brits Woody, for lack of a better term. So good luck, Ravi. I'm anxious to see where you take it from here, my friend.
I'm sure we'll continue to see this project develop. Now, this next video, Aaron, our last bit of Amiga news this week, it's been a slow news week, comes to us from our buddy Chris Edwards Restoration. Now, you've had a chance to watch this, Aaron. Tell us about his experience installing Amiga OS 3.2.
Well, this just popped today, and I wanted to mention it because I'd actually had just a little bit of dialogue with him. You know, I like Chris's stuff. He reminds me of like a so much better and more talented version of myself. Same kind of laid back, dopey attitude, except he's got the skills. And so all he was going to do in this video was install the new Amiga OS on his computer, and he was going to install the ROMs. All right, simple, right? Well, he found out that they couldn't send him discs for it. They could always send him the CD-ROM. I guess the place that he ordered out of Spain isn't providing the disc, which is a ton of discs, by the way. So there was that. And then he ordered two sets of ROMs, I believe, one for his Amiga 3000, one for his 1200. Well, they didn't send the 1200 ones. They did send the 3000 ones, and when he put them in the 2000, they didn't work.
Oh.
And that's because there's a I'm going to read directly, if I may, here from the from his thing here. If I could get down here and scroll down here and find it. Yeah, here it is. So he says that the Amiga 3000 low ROM was named incorrectly on the CD. And he said, most resellers were notified a month ago, but these things happen. So he mentioned that I might want to spread the news. So if you know what that means, there you go. There was a boo-boo somewhere.
Right.
He had all kinds of trouble with this. Now, once he took took the discs off the CD, put them on his GoTek, it was a bang-bang operation, and everything looked fine. But he had some trouble here. So...
Does he have a touchscreen? I saw him touch the screen.
I think he does have a touchscreen. I saw that too. It's funny because later on in the video, he beats the tar out of this monitor right here. I haven't seen someone just pound. I don't think I've ever seen one pound on an LCD monitor. That's a new, because, you know, back in the day, you'd beat the crap out of your TV.
Sure.
You know,
yeah.
That happened, but not an LCD monitor. So there you go. Oh, I will say that Frank just chimed in from Retro Rewind. It says they burnt the ROM files instead of the bin files.
Mm.
So there you go. And also Frank does mention that Retro Rewind does test theirs before they ship them. So something to pay attention to if you buy these. When you order from far away, you get sometimes weird stuff happens. That's all you can say about that.
You know what they say? Nothing good comes out of Spain.
Oh, that's not true. They make great swords, for example. So there you go.
All right, Aaron. If you click back to the news page, I've actually added one more link on there. You might have to refresh.
Got it.
This is the monster segue, Aaron. We're going to go right into it. If you were not happy with ordering from your preferred reseller of choice, perhaps check out Retro Rewind if you want to order Amiga OS 3.2, especially if you are located here on the North American side of things. Retro Rewind is offering not only the Amiga OS 3.2 license, but also the ability to order up to three additional physical Kickstart ROMs that allow you to install Amiga OS on, you know, as many machines as you have, because the license isn't just for one Amiga. If you've got a 600 and a CDTV and a 4000, the $150 license pays for all of that. All you need are the Kickstart ROMs. And of course, if you already upgraded your Kickstart ROMs for 3.1.4, those are unnecessary. And if you do want that floppy disk set, Frank's got the floppies and he stress tests the heck out of these. He makes sure that they're ready. You're not going to get bum floppies from Retro Rewind. I'll tell you that right now. So,
I was asking how many, I thought this was a ton of floppies and it is. It's from what I'm reading here, 13 big floppy disks.
Monkey Island 2-ish. Yeah.
Monkey Island 2-ish. Frank also mentioned that the packages they said have started arriving to customers today. So
fantastic.
They are already, despite what the webpage says here about the pre-order, they're shipping now.
Yeah. Yeah. So and here's the deal. You can order one of these. It's $50 for the license, but you can save 10% off your order. Just use the promo code AmigosSpringFun at checkout, and you can save 10% off that order, get a little bit cheaper. So check that out. Again, Retro Rewind, we thank them for being an Amigo sponsor. Frank's good people, and it's a good place to
shop.
Yeah, yeah. All right, Aaron, that's going to conclude our Amiga news segment for the week. It's time to jump in to our game,
Sim
City.
You've been waiting on this one, haven't you, Boach?
I have. I've been waiting 302 episodes for
this. Holy smokes. There you go. So, we've got Sim City here. How we didn't get to this by now is because I know which a fan of this game you are is beyond me. This came out, and I learned a lot this week researching this, but that I didn't know. This was released on the Amiga in 89. In fact, this was one of the first couple machines this got released on, and was on just one disc. And now there are multiple discs. In fact, this is a sidebar. I think this was the last Amiga game I ever bought locally, Boat.
Oh,
recall,
interesting.
I bought this at the little game store in Milton that went out of business. I was flipping through their discs, and they had SimCity, the 1 meg and the 512 version. I bought both of them. I think I paid $1 for the discs. I didn't get the boxes for it. So this is technically the last local game that I bought for the Amiga. So kind of neat. Never played it, by the way, with those discs. Anyway, this was developed by Maxis, sorta. It's a funny story when it comes to the development of this. We might as well get into it now, but then we'll move on down. So, and I'm sure you know this, but I'll just kind of touch on it briefly. Will Wright developed a game, I believe it was for Broderbund. It was called Raid on Bungling Bay.
Mm-hmm.
Right? This is a pretty famous story, but if you've never heard it, it's kind of funny. So the whole purpose of Raid on Bungling Bay is you fly around bombing the Bumbly Empire. You bomb their cities. And, of course, Will's this kind of guy who made it a little more complex than that. So there's a supply chain. There are industry there. And so as you bomb stuff, if you target your bombing of these certain areas, you will cause them more trouble. You know, like boats bring in supplies, and you can bomb the boats and bring them in. And then
can you bomb the base?
Yeah, you could. You got that right. And so there's a little, basically, if you go back and play this game now, you can kind of see the seeds of SimCity being planted, because in a wacky way, when you look at the ground targets, it's sort of SimCity-like, Boat.
Right.
They had an NES version of Bungling Bay, didn't they, Boat, as I recall?
Boy, I don't know if they did. I know they had an Atari 8-bit version.
Though. Did you play Bungling Bay at all back
That's one of those games that I really need to check out, because you hear it talked about all the time.
Yeah.
I get it confused with Raid Over Moscow, which I think is incredibly complicated and terrifying. So this is a much more user-friendly game, I think.
But it's funny that because Will noticed that he had more fun fiddling with the stuff that made the city than he did playing the game, because the game is basically going around bombing stuff. And so that's where he got the idea to come up with a game where you build a city. And off he went. So he started building this game here. Well, he built the game, and over time it developed, and he took this to Broderbund. He's like, look what I got. Actually, at the time he called it Micropolis, I believe is what the name of it was. And Broderbund was like, we're not seeing this one, Will. It basically take off.
Right.
So he's like, all right. So anyway, lo and behold, one of his buddies had just started a tiny little outfit called Maxis. And they know what? Maxis had really only had one other game at this point. And this, believe it or not, SimCity was actually finished first, but released second. And so they decided to release Maxis on, release the game on the Maxis title. Well, they took the game to Broderbund, and from what I read on a couple different websites, they were there to like iron something. I don't know what it was. But they weren't necessarily there to show Broderbund the game. And someone at Broderbund started looking at this game, and they're like, wait a minute. This not only doesn't suck, this might be cool. And so Broderbund worked out a deal with Maxis where they're going to distribute it. So they basically, that was the birth of Maxis. But Broderbund had enough common sense to be like, yeah, we're going to stick around on this one.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's how SimCity was developed. So effectively coming out of another game entirely, that's a neat story.
Yeah.
And like I said, Raid on Bungling Bay, it's a fun game in its own right. But if you ever get a chance to go back and play it, you can see the roots of this game. So anyways, lo and behold, here this game comes. The Amiga port they did it a port. The earlier ports of this game were the Amiga, the black and white Mac, and the PC. The PC came out a little bit later than the Amiga version. And if you look at the three of those games to compare them, the Amiga was the king dong of SimCity, the original version of SimCity. It's got more colors than the DOS version. Clearly, it's got more colors than the monochrome
Mac
version.
The first time I played SimCity,
Yeah.
It came in a box that didn't look like this. This is a game that I also bought. Yeah. It looked like an old like TV set or a jukebox, and it had knobs on it. And here's the thing that I remember from this game. I don't remember there being color in my version of SimCity.
Yeah, it's possible that I played on the Mac.
No, I played it on the PC. Oh. It's possible that I never turned it on. Like maybe it was an option to adjust the graphic settings.
It is an option.
And I played it my entire life on the PC until I played the Super Nintendo version, thinking that this game was in black and white only.
Well, and that's great. And I believe because the PC version supports CGA, and so you could go in there with the monochrome. Now, you mentioned the box, and I will say for those listening, the box I've got up here is basically that's a box. That's what they did on this particular type of box. This is the European release boat that has. They basically took like the harbor. What is it? It's not the Australian harbor with the opera house there. Help me out here, boat.
Sydney Opera House.
Sydney, that's right. And then they just basically they 80s it up real good, 80s style writing.
Lots of neon colors. Crap.
I don't like this box. I don't like the other one either. The England, there's actually, this game got released about a million times. Mm-hmm. The one you're thinking about, yes, it had it was like a jukebox style. There was some dials on it. And the Amiga version, the original release, had like a Godzilla in the middle of it stomping through this town. And then SimCity was written in these like almost like a neon style graphics. Mm-hmm. It's funny, we don't often talk about box art that much, but I was reading that the people that made Godzilla, we're real happy with that. And so they made Maxis change it. So if you've got any of the newer versions of that type of box art, it's got a whirlwind in the middle of it instead of a Godzilla. They took the Godzilla out. But yeah, this is the wacky, everywhere on Earth except for America apparently got, this is the box they got. I think, I don't like really any of the boxes. I think the box, the next level up where it looks more like something you put on like a bookshelf, the real stylized SimCity and SimAnn. I was like, those are, it was a good choice to go that route. So anyway, I mentioned it, that this was developed and worked on by Will Wright. There's actually a ton of people here. I'll just knock a couple off here. It was coded by Brian Conrad, Brian Witt. The graphics were done by Don Bayless, Scott Martindale, and the music was done by Stephen Hales and Will Wright. To say the music was done, it's not like this game is... The sound and the music
Where's
is
music
practically
in the game?
Zero. Sorry. I don't know. Yeah. You got me on that. And of course, it multilingual, the whole nine yards. Because you don't. This is another one of those games where, like, you could probably get away with changing the language pretty easy on it. So, just to get it started here, I remember the first time I saw this game. Of course, I had a liberated copy of it, and I put it in the computer. I think I put this in the old Amiga 1000. And fired it up. I looked at it. I fiddled with it for about 15 minutes. And then that's the last time I played it for 20 years. I was like, it wasn't my bag. And so I have now before I had reintroduced myself to it before this week, but it was in the last 5 years where I started fiddling with it again. But this is a game where you basically become a city designer, a city planner, and then a city manager. You take on all the roles of planning a city from nuts to bolts, right, in terms of finding where you want the city, how you want the city to lay out. Bo, you said you played this thing pretty real early in the game. What struck you about it early on when you first bought it? Did you know you wanted to play it before you got it? Did you have your mom buy it? Struck you?
That is a great question. And most of the time, I remember exactly the circumstances of games that I purchased, especially on the PC. Because just like everybody, most of my games were pirated, whether it was on the Atari or whether it was on the IBM or whatever. This game just kind of appeared, and I don't know if it was just a rare time when I saw a game in a store and I thought it looked kind of neat, you know, and then I just randomly asked my parents, and it was one of those once in a blue moon occasions where maybe my dad looked at it and he's like, yeah, maybe I could play this too. And so he bought it. As a kid, and I think that, you know, a lot of people are like this, I was sort of fascinated by things in miniature. Especially model cities, model railroads, things like that. I know that you and the Brent went up to Canada for some sort of like miniature world excursion, right?
It was cool. Yeah, I love that.
So, I mean, I think lots of young people, lots of everybody really loves seeing, you know, things in miniature. And I thought, boy, being able to build a city and watch it run, that sounds like a cool concept. And so that's how I ended up with it. And this is a perfect, you know, I've thought about this a lot. Cities are the perfect thing to miniaturize, because unlike a farm, unlike a tower or some of the later sim games, cities are one thing that everybody has some sort of idea how they operate. I mean, hardly anybody's a real city planner, but everybody knows that there's areas where people live. Everybody knows that there's a transportation grid, whether it's roads or rail or whatever. And you've got to build places for people to work, and you've got to power all of it. You've got to manage the crime. You've got to manage the fire risk. These are all concepts that people are familiar with already. So when the game lays itself out, the learning curve is very shallow. I think that, you know, when the series went on, you know, throughout as we know from our infamous Sim Life episode, things got real hairy towards the end there.
That's a lot more complex, ain't it?
Yeah. Yeah. So, as a kid, this was something that I still remember being a little bit confused about how power worked. When you place the things down, there weren't a whole lot of tool tips in the original version. And I'm sure this thing has been re-released so many times. It's like, you start putting stuff down, you're going to pop up that says, hey, buddy, put a power station somewhere so you can power these things. But on the original version, you didn't have that. One of the things that I think is great also about SimCity are the animations. In a lot of games like this, I think you would see, you might build the city, but you wouldn't actually see the city come to life. And even in the first version of this game, you see cars on the road, you see a train going around the track, just like a model train.
Boats.
You see boats pulling in and things like that. So that's a huge sort of like immersion technique. Those simple two-frame animations really make you feel like the city is alive.
Yeah, yeah. I agree. You know, this game, my introduction to it, my reintroduction, like I said, I told you my reintroduction to this was just because I kept hearing about how great it was. All my friends were playing it, you know, and I was like, you know, I'm going to go in here and give this another shot. And one of the things that is fun about it, and this really applies to this version, is that it's later versions got really complex. This one's not mega complex, and so you can just basically sit down and screw around, which is basically, that's the way I like to play it. There are scenarios in this that you can take on, but what I like to sit down and just screw around, basically. Yeah. There are ways to get extra money if you want to really just screw around with it. And so I just like to build crazy things and just to see what happens. It's the fact that they put the disasters in there, that you could always do that for fun. I know some people like the elegance of building a city that is so awesome, like a utopia type thing. And that appeals to me for a little while. This reminds me a little bit of Little Computer People, which it should. But in that, it's almost not a game. Like, I mean, it is, but it's not. It's more like you mentioned, a train system. It's more like something like that, where you're just basically, I mean, because there's no ending to this until you run out of money, basically. So
I think comparing this with Little Computer People is a stretch.
Well,
this
game, I don't mean in terms of,
do things that affect the outcome. If you just screw around, that's on you, buddy. That's not the game's fault.
Right.
That you're just
I'm not comparing the two in terms of game, but I'm talking in terms of I don't consider that game a game really either. It's more.
Well,
of a
Little
toy.
Computer People is not a game. It's not a game. But this game, I mean, this. Explain yourself. Explain why this is like Little Computer People.
Well, no. What I'm saying is it's less of a game and more of an activity.
Okay, explain why it's not a game.
Well, let me put it this way. I was reading. I was looking through some wiki stuff and some manual stuff from the game, and they actually, even the people at Maxis, refer to this as a toy. They call it like an electronic or interactive toy. And when I thought about it, I could see why. I mean, it's not, to me, it's not that gamey, you know, this particular version. Now, I'm sure later on they added more gamey stuff, but I mean, until you get to a certain point where you're just upkeeping the city and stuff. And so to me, it doesn't strike me as like a, what we, I would consider a normal game. I'm not knocking it. Don't get me wrong.
I'm just interested because what would they have to add for it to become a game for you?
I guess, you know, I don't know. I mean, this is more like it's a sandbox type of affair. We just keep messing around. I get it. I don't want you to think that I'm ragging on it. It's an activity. It's a nutty activity. That allows you to add stuff in. It's fun, but that's just always sort of the way I looked at it. When I read that, it wasn't terribly surprising to me that they sort of looked at their own creation in the same way. Especially considering this thing actually worked its way. And I didn't know this, but maybe you can fill me in on this. I was reading that SimCity actually worked its way in the schools, and there were over 10,000 schools around the country that were using SimCity, like basically a Scholastic edition to teach.
Yeah,
and they were all, and which I think is neat, and that's what I'm talking about. I mean, it's more than just a simple video game. I mean, there's something to learn here, I guess is what I'm saying.
Well, I think that it depends on what you define a game as. Somebody said, I think BarkBit said in the chat that, you know, a game has a clear end. Maybe, I mean, SimCity, it ends when you run out of money.
Right.
But it never really ends. But there, I think that you can, the scenarios are really the gamey part of the game.
You know,
because you can complete the scenarios. But I'm just like you. I couldn't care less about the scenarios. I like the sandbox nature of the game. I like seeing, you know, you have a plan, you put the plan into action, you see if it works or if it doesn't work. One of the things that the Nintendo or the Super Nintendo, I know we haven't talked about the various ports yet, and I don't know how much we're going to get in there, but the Super Nintendo port is the port of this game that I'm the most familiar with, aside from the original PC port. One of the things that it added was it added a lot more gaminess to the game, in that as you progressed, you unlocked various new structures that you could build. You unlocked different things that you could do. There was a mayor that sort of acted like your advisor. He was like a guy with green hair, and there were little cutscenes where he'd run out and he'd tell you stuff. It was a great addition to a game. It added personality to what was, you know, a very impersonal experience. It was sort of like going to a staff meeting with a wacky sidekick.
Did this support the mouse boat?
I don't think it did, but here's the thing. This game does not really need mouse support. You can hold down the trigger buttons and move with the D-pad and sort of scrub around pretty quickly. But this is not really a game until you build like the mega, you know, super mega city that encompasses tons and tons and tons of screens. Most of the game you can get around just fine. Even with the Amiga version, you know, you're moving around by just dragging the mouse to the corner of the screen. Yeah, or you can go into the map mode and do it that way too. But it wasn't a game that really suffered from not having mouse support, much different than a game like Lemmings or Cannon Fodder, which really could have benefited from it. Mm-hmm. But the Super Nintendo version just added some things that sort of made it more gamey because it added more progression elements to it.
Hmm. Very good. Now, let me ask you, just since we talked about it, which one do you prefer, Boat?
Oh, I'll go with the Super Nintendo version any day of the week. But the Amiga version was released like 3 years early.
Sure.
So you know, it's not the Amiga version's fault. They had time to go and see, you know, how can we make this better? And of course, the things that fly on a computer aren't going to fly on a console. Like not putting music in your game, that's a no-go.
Yeah,
And the thing is, some people don't like the music. They think it's repetitive, but it's the same thing as any video game. Having the music there, you can always mute your TV, you know, but not having music, you don't get any option. So,
I
always like the music. The music changed with every season. Oh, did I mention there are seasons in the Super Nintendo version? So as you go through, you know, all the quarters of the year, all of the foliage changes color, snow appears on the ground, things grow.
It's got really, lots more buildings too, doesn't it?
Well, like I said, as you move through the game, different buildings get unlocked and things like that. You can build a zoo, you can build different fun stuff. So yeah, it's like I said, it's much more of a game and less of a sandbox, but it still is a pretty big sandbox.
You know, while we're talking about the convergence, and I'm not going to read this. I mean, this thing went to everything. It'd be easier to read what it didn't get released on. As far as I can tell, Boat, according to the Hololite, The Amiga version of this, there were, as far as we know, there was four known releases of this, from version 1 to version 1.3. So I'm assuming there was just some bug fixes that was sprinkled in here. Some of the more surprising systems just got released on both the BBC Electron. That sort of surprised me. The C64, a lot of people don't realize that that was the flagship platform. That's when they started working on SimCity on the Commodore 64 in 85. Mm. And then it didn't get released till much later on, and it was a little bit neutered when it came out. But still, there's a C64 port of this.
The most surprising port for me is the ZX Spectrum version.
Yeah.
I had to go with that.
How was
a
that,
while
Lord?
Back on a stream. And it is, I mean, here's the thing. SimCity and its nuts and its bolts, you know, will pretty much run on anything. You know, maybe you won't get as much detail once the residential areas turn into houses or whatever, but you still get a pretty good amount of detail on the specy version. There was a Nintendo Entertainment System version that was planned and actually got built and then was abandoned because it was so close to the launch of the Super Nintendo version. And that recently was found and released into the wild just a couple of years ago.
Have you tried that one yet, Boat?
I have. I've tried it before. It's similar to the Super Nintendo version. I can see why they scrapped it, because they wanted to just develop the Super Nintendo version, because that was a pretty early release in the Super Nintendo's life.
Yeah. You know, just... And we really haven't gotten into this too deep. So just for on the off chance that you've never played this game, we mentioned that you're effectively designing a city. But what you're doing is you're laying out buildings... residential buildings, factory style buildings, or power generational style buildings. You're laying out different buildings in your city, and then once you've got these buildings laid out, you're connecting up roads to them. You're connecting railroad tracks to them. You're connecting power from your various plants to your various residential commercial properties. And as your city gets bigger, your needs will increase, and you'll have to have fire departments and police departments. You have to control traffic. You'll have to control pollution. You'll have to build big places for boats to dock, stuff like that. And your city can grow epically large, Boat. I remember, it's funny, I played a lot of this on the Tandy back in the day. Mm-hmm. I may have played it on the Tandy before I played it on the Amiga, because they're fairly similar. Like I said, the PC version is a lot uglier. But I remember my buddy stayed up all night playing this and had a city that was so huge that it brought my Tandy to a crawl. Was killing this thing.
Yeah, yeah, and that's one thing somebody mentioned that is true about the Super Nintendo version. I remember I got SimCity from a friend or something. We did a trade, and I ended up with the game. And they built this city that effectively took up the entire landmass. Yeah. It was massive, and everything was running. Everything was humming. But it moved so slow. This is definitely one of these games that the bigger your city gets, the more your system starts to bog down.
Yeah, while we were thinking, we just touched on the Super Nintendo version, one thing I did read, and I wanted to get your thoughts on this because I kind of thought it was funny. The Super Nintendo version doesn't have Godzilla in it. As I read, it doesn't have Bowser.
It's got Bowser. Bowser terrorizes your city. Yeah.
You see, now that's... And I believe there's also a guy in it called, Professor Wright or something right?
He's your guy. He's your little helper dude.
And that's supposed to be Will Wright, right?
Right.
For all intents and purposes. See, that's right. Those are cute little touches. You got to give them that. And when you're doing something like this for the Super Nintendo, you can see how you could get away with that. You know what I'm saying? It makes it's almost sort of endearing to it. There was a lot of crazy trivia on SimCity. And one of the things that I thought was odd, but I think it's kind of neat. You'll recall this was a big deal a long time ago. I mean, probably, I don't know, 10 years ago, they had a gimmick out that was called the OLPC, one laptop per child. Remember this thing, Boat? They were going to give this thing to third world countries or whatever. Mm-hmm. They basically released the code for SimCity to make that a free distributable thing that's on every one of those laptops. So every kid that ever got one of those could play SimCity.
That was sort of a doomed project.
It was a dupe. I do like the idea. I mean, the thought is nice. Yeah. And the fact that they put, if you're going to put a game on a laptop like that, this is an excellent game because you can actually learn something. I mean, would you consider this could this be thrown in, lumped into the realm of edutainment, Boat?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, this game teaches you. Well, this is definitely edutainment, not educainment, as the Brent would say, because you're having fun, but you also are learning about the different way, you know, how to make a city run. Like I said, the thing that makes this great is that you watch the city take shape before you in real time. It's not turn-based. As you're doing things, things are changing, things are happening, and the clock continues to run. You know, you continue to move through. At the end of the year, you get your report that tells you, you know, how far in the hole you are. You can look at the graphs at any time and see where your pollution levels are, where your crime levels are. You can make changes on the fly. You see how your citizens, you know, see you as a as a mayor,
that
whether
can be
you're
very
doing
telling
a good job
too.
Or not.
Yeah.
So this is one of those games that you know, it's one of the all-time great edutainment titles, although it wasn't marketed as an edutainment game. It was marketed as a straight-up game, which is probably why it's one of the great all-time edutainment titles.
You know, I think that listeners would be interested in this. I wanted to get a little insight, you know, on the way you play this, Boat. Now, when you start the game, you've got easy, medium, and difficult level, or hard. I tried to play hard this week just to say I did. Man, they're not kidding. That's a lot tougher. What do you usually play this on when you play?
Oh, I usually play it on the easiest difficulty level, which I think gives you just the most money.
Yeah, I agree with that.
And really, this is a game that you can go back and forth where, you know, you can put in the infinite money code and sort of play around and find out what works. And then you can test your theory by going back and starting with a certain amount of money and seeing if you can keep it running that way.
And you could, the good thing is save your city and then you can kind of screw around a little bit. What are your thoughts on the disasters in this, Boat? They can screw up when you got a good thing going. You could also unleash them yourself. A lot of people hated these things. What were your thoughts
on
them?
Well, you know, in some of the games, I believe that in the PC version, you could actually turn off, it was one of the versions I had, you could just turn off disasters completely. You could make them never occur. It's part of the it's part of running a city, just like you can't turn off crime in this game as much as you might want to. Every once in a while, a fire is going to rip through your city and destroy a bunch of stuff, and you got to build it back.
Yeah, what was your strategy to get when fire happened? I would just basically take my. I read somewhere. In fact, I read it this week because this is the first week I ever did it. I read that if your stuff's on fire, if you just bulldoze everything around the fire, then you're golden. And so that was. But
yeah,
it sucked to go in there and plow down like a stadium or something. It's like, oh, jeez.
One of the things that this game does not reflect accurately is the speed at which demolition occurs.
Yeah.
Because if it was that easy to knock down a stadium, Riverfront Stadium would have been demolished years ago.
Yeah, no kidding, eh? But then again, if you look at the prices on this stuff, too, everything in this game was way more
reasonable. Like $3,000.
I think the stadium's like 10 grand. I think you're in. So it's a fun time. I should mention that they released the source code on this, Boat, for those that are interested in tinkering with it. And I bet some cool stuff's been done with it. I didn't look, but I wouldn't be surprised. Now, of course, this game had a million sequels, including SimCity 2000. And then going from there, and tons of spinoffs.
Yeah, I think that overall, SimCity 2000 and 3000 are the most loved, I believe. And there was also SimCity 4, which has some fans. I'll tell you what doesn't have a lot of fans was when EA released the game just called SimCity. This has been probably almost 10 years ago now.
That was a huge mistake.
They decided to make multiplayer required and have different people's different cities produce different resources and you'd be interacting with all these. But they totally overlooked the fact of why people like to play SimCity. They like to sit down, be in control of the entire thing themselves and not have to sort of bow to anybody else. It's their city. And so partly, I don't want to say as a response to that, but there was a game that came out and I can't believe that I'm blanking on it now. City Skylines that came out.
Yeah.
And that was really the SimCity game that everybody wanted.
Really? Skylines? You can pinpoint exactly where EA blew it. Mm-hmm. And that was it. I mean, and that, and then Skylines. Now Skylines is a huge deal.
Yeah.
You know, and it had a, it, but it, but they completely blew it. And also it ran like crap. Mm-hmm. You know, it had a bunch of, it was just a disaster. It's amazing. I remember it had to be, you had to be online to play it. It was another mm-hmm. thing at the time,
yep. Yep.
Which is, of course, you hear still here. I mean, this is a while back, mm-hmm. you know, it did every shady, crooked, stupid thing that you can do. They did it. And I right. mean, how do you torpedo a franchise like SimCity? It's unbelievable.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and City course- Skylines introduced so many cool things. Like at any time, you can click on a resident and it will tell you where they're going, where they live, where they're on their way to, what their job is. And there could be millions of these. I mean, it really is the, it's the ultimate fulfillment of what this game started. You couldn't have City Skylines without SimCity, but City Skylines is like the natural endpoint. I don't know where they take it from here. It's so good.
Now, let me ask you, Bo. Now, all that said, you've had your SimCity 2000, you've had your SimCity 3000, you've had your City Skylines. Can you go back? Could you come back? In fact, you can talk about it this week since you played it. Did you have fun playing this? And could you come back and do it again after you had the more advanced ones? Did you enjoy it?
Oh, yeah. This game is great. Yeah, I still enjoy the this is almost like a Farmville type game. If you take out all of the crap that Farmville brings with it in terms of like waiting around and stuff like that, the mechanics are super, super simple. It's designed to be something that is a relaxing experience. You know, you can turn down the time and just kind of take your time.
Yeah.
The thing that was the most annoying for me is the way that you have to move around. You have to drag the mouse, or you have to like push the mouse to the side of the screen to get things. I wish you could WASD around. Of course, WASD wasn't a thing back then, but use the cursor keys or whatever.
It does have keyboard shortcuts if you know them.
If you know them.
They can move them around.
I wish that the icons would have been in color. You know, yes. I think that they, you know, of course, they've re-released this game multiple times in its classic form and yeah. improved it. And I wish there was music. I wish there were more sound effects. But this game is still enjoyable. It's still fun to sit down with, for sure.
I have to say, I enjoyed this more this week than I've ever enjoyed it. And the reason is, I don't know, maybe I've been doing this show. I have improved my skills a little bit, believe it or not. And I've also gained some patience. And you're right. I hated Farmville, but I see where you're going. This game is perfect for a doofus like me. I don't want anything real involved. You know, I just don't have the kind of, I can't handle it. Mm-hmm. This is right in the sweet spot. It's just involved enough to where I'm not totally confused all the time.
Right.
And to me, that makes it a lot more fun. You know, I looked up some reviews on this thing, Boat. I can find where I stuck the darn things. Did we get any Discord action on this? Did.
We got quite a few reviews on Discord. As always, if you are a supporter of Amigos, you get access to our Discord server where you can leave us reviews. We start with the living legend, Graham W. Vebke. He says, I've played the MS-DOS version a lot, and I played the Amiga 1 Meg version here. It should be noted that the 64 colors in the 1 Meg Amiga version versus the 16 colors in the MS-DOS version does help a lot with the tiles used.
Yeah, it does. I agree with him on that.
I feel like I prefer the Amiga version, as it does seem to be a little bit more zoomed out than the MS-DOS version, and you can see more of your city. He didn't play the 512K version. Like Civilization, this is a game where you need to look past the art style and music, or lack of, and focus on the gameplay itself. There's a cracking game here to play if you enjoy strategy games. The key is learning where and when to expand your city, ensuring you place the residential, commercial, and industrial zones throughout and connect them via roads and railroads. Add in crime, fires, tax rates, and your mayor opinion and natural disasters, and you need to keep on top of everything at times at a frantic pace. I recall seeing a SNES version of this game in an Amigos video, and it had decent music. Why the Amiga version, especially the 1 Meg version, couldn't do this confuses me. Overall, a great game and worth your time if this is your thing. 8 out of 10. Lord Soup writes, still fun after all these years. The great granddaddy of modern city builders. I just had a fun afternoon reminding myself why I played this so much when young. But it mostly made me want to play the greatly expanded SimCity 2000 or maybe SimCity 3000, possibly the pinnacle of the series. It doesn't need a lot more, and they're still fun to be had, but a little more to manage would kick it into higher gear. 7.5 out of 10. Lobsterminator writes, one of the most important games in gaming history. I played this a lot on the Amiga back then and loved it, but these days I appreciate it more for its legacy. SimCity 2000 perfected the game, and it still feels pretty fresh where SimCity is a bit simplistic. It birthed both the city builder genre and the sim whatever genre. A true pioneer. 7 out of 10. Ricky DeRosha writes, a true genre classic, both of city building games and sim games in general. Designing cities is loads of fun, as well as turning around and releasing disasters upon your city. 10 out of 10. Jason Warnes writes, Simtastic, 8 out of 10. Super Famiking writes, normally, if you don't have to drive fast, shoot things, or blow up stuff, then I ain't playing it, but SimCity is one of the few exceptions. Who'd have thought city planning and building could be so much fun? There's something incredibly satisfying about building your first residential block, first industrial unit, adding power in a road, then seeing somebody move in and drive to work. This is a game that had my Amiga permanently on for days at a time back in the day, with only the monitor getting switched off at night. I didn't stop until every grid square had something on it. My friend Gordon and I used to take 20-minute hot seat goes for two-player action, and it works like that incredibly well. Play it on easy with disaster switched off and speed on slow and have a relaxing time, or crank it up hard and fast and disaster's on for a completely different experience. He says, I played it a lot over the years, but this week was the first time for a while and I had just as much fun as ever. 9.5 out of 10. Dave Velociraptor writes, it's difficult to score this game because later revisions of it were massive improvements. However, the original game still has merit, and like many genres, eventually the format would be taken too far and complicated. I reach for SimCity 2000 these days. 9.9 out of 10 in the day and 7.5 out of 10 now. Pixels at Dawn writes, let's say this up front, and I hate to do this. This is not the best port of SimCity, but it's still a decent port of my preferred version of the game. SimCity Classic is a wonderfully chilled experience, and while later entries in the series added quality of life improvements, they also upped the complexity, losing some of the magic from the first edition. The Amiga had several releases of SimCity, and many people miss out on the 1 meg version 1.3, which added substantially improved graphics and UI using extra half-bright mode, bringing it up to the same level of many of the ports. The sound effects are sadly lacking on the Amiga version, and while only the SNES version had music, it's still a miss for such a slow-paced game. Regardless, the Amiga version works well, and mouse is always going to be the best option here. A great fit for the platform, 8 out of 10. Zebedee's Magic Roundabout writes, I'm a man of little words. I loved this game as a kid, and it has to be in my top 10 Amiga games of all time. Paul, a.k.a. Hermsky, finishes it out. He says, firm, 9 out of 10. Not a whole lot else to add for the positive comments above, so this time we'll add my personal spin on things when I played it back in the day. I really did find it addictive and original and have fond memories in competition with my dad. We built our own individual cities and regularly compared each other's work on family visits, playing in competition with each other for the best run city. Not to mention the sneaky sabotage when we used to get up to behind each other's backs before we left for home. So this is a well-loved game.
Man, that's about as many responses as we've ever gotten to a game. Well, I just to dovetail with those good thoughts, I found some reviews for this. The folks over at Lemon give this an 8.31. And as I look across the board here with the big shooters, Amiga Format gave this a 92. Amiga Joker, 79. For them, that's pretty good. Mm-hmm. Amiga Resource gave this a 19 out of 20, so it's basically 90%. CU Amiga, 95. So overall, according to Lemon, this had an average magazine rating of 87, which that's real high for that average. So this is an A title. There's no doubt about that. I was surprised that when I looked this up on eBay Boat to find that these are pretty plentiful and they're fairly easy to buy. If you're in the U.S. and or the U.K., I found versions on both sides of the pond. You're going to be paying around 50 U.S. dollars, maybe a little less, and you can get the discs cheap. I saw plenty of people selling the discs, probably more than most games that just had the discs, and they were going for under 10 bucks. So if you need the discs, you're covered. But yeah, I enjoyed it, but I had a real good time with this bad boy.
Yeah, it's interesting. You know, Pix just posted an image of the 1.3 version of this game.
Yeah.
And I don't know why this has not been WHD-ified, because this thing looks freaking great. I mean, it looks just as good as the Super Nintendo version, or any version of the original game that I've seen. It's a shame that that I didn't take a bigger look at this, and that not more people don't know about it, because it looks great with that half bright mode.
Yeah, that's looking nice, doesn't it? Very good. Well, that's something to look for then, if you could find it.
Yeah, yeah. All right, Aaron. Let's go ahead and leave our city for the time being and move on to our YouTube channel. Let's been checking in on what's going on with our community this week.
All right, but not a huge week here, but we do have a few things to talk about. We'll start off, as we often do, with myself and the Brent, that no good wacky, the Brent. And this time out, we did a show, an ARG show, on Last Games of a Trilogy, Boat. And this seemed like a pretty easy one, and it was not, to try to find one of these that would work. And, you know, the Brent, once again, he's always the wacky one. He picked a game I've never heard of, in a series I've never heard of. Nyet 3, The Revenge of the Mutant Stones, which is a shareware title for DOS, if you can believe this. I never heard of this series, but I'll be darned, this is a pretty fun Tetris knockoff that has different mission-based Tetris levels.
Where's the Mutant Stones at? That's what I want to know.
They're in there, Boat. But it's funny, we both asked the same question, but apparently they're in there somewhere. But this was a surprise. I mean, I know, and by the way, this is supported with ExoDOS. So if you've got that set, you can go and play this. But I actually recommend this, Net 3. I went a completely different route this week and looked at Star Control 3. You know I'm a big Star Control fan, yeah. Boat.
Yeah.
And we looked at Star Control 3.
I'll tell you something. You don't remember this.
Yeah.
But Paul Ritchie, who you call Paul Reich throughout on this episode, actually was one of the developers of Archon.
Oh, I called him Paul Reich.
Yeah,
that sounds like me.
Well, if you didn't know, I had to look it up and listen to an interview with him on Antic. That's the only reason, because it does look like Paul Reich, but it's actually Paul Ritchie. But the same guy that did Star Control 3 did Archon. Pretty cool, huh?
Well, it's funny you should mention that, because at one point in the game, I tell Bram, like, you know, this is a lot like Archon, except in space.
Yeah.
You know, and turns the thing. And so there you go. Thank you, Boat. You've solidified my genius again.
That's right. Yeah. That's what I do.
You know, Star Control 3 was the last of this trilogy, and there was a lot of interesting stuff behind the scenes. I think it's worth a listen if you're into that sort of thing. So our ARG, I'd give it a shot if you dig it. Next on the docket here, look at this. It's Xenon Canine is in town here, Bo. I haven't seen this yet.
Yeah.
This is the old Hermsky special here with Attic Attack, or how do you pronounce this, Bo?
The Tick Attack.
Yeah, the dumb way. Man, we weren't very good at this game, were we, Bo?
No, no.
There's a speed run in this?
Yeah.
Oh, I got to see this. So this is a must watch, ladies and gentlemen. Because me and Boat, we speed run to our deaths in Attic Attack. So check that out. That looks great. I didn't even see that get popped up. I did watch this one, Boat. I was there. I was privy to this. I was in the shooting. This is our good buddy, Jack Flack. He plays Impossible Mission 1 and Impossible Mission 2, the Impossibler mission. Did you get in the Impossible Mission games?
These
back
games,
in the day?
I really feel like these are the type of games that you had to be there. I've tried to play some of these, and I don't believe that they age incredibly well, to be honest.
I wanted to like them. Mm-hmm. I wanted to be good at them, and the animation and stuff is awesome.
Mm-hmm.
But first of all, I pirated mine, so if you pirated it, forget about it. Forget about it. You're not going to get anywhere, because these games are, by the way, really complex to play. It was actually kind of neat watching Flack play it on here, because I never really got to see someone play it with any prowess, so that was kind of fun. And he jumps over to Impossible Mission 2, and he sort of craps on Impossible Mission 2. He's not a big fan of this one. But some people may love it, and some people may not love it, but it looks interesting to me. I've looked at these, but never really gotten into them. But a good stream is always from the Flackster, so check out Sprite Castle. Jack Flack playing some Impossible Mission 1 and 2. Now, this one, Boat, holy smokes, are you kidding me? You know, I'm a big, huge fan of Rocky Horror.
Yeah, you
picture
are.
Show. Is there a bigger fan than me? There can't
no,
be.
You're
there
the biggest be. Fan I've ever seen of this.
Thank you.
This,
Thank yes. you, Boat. And so when this popped up, you can imagine my surprise, because we actually, me and the Brent played this on ARG Presents one time long ago. And I think, as I recall, we both sort of liked it.
Mm-hmm.
And so, and not just because it's, you know, Brent's also a big Rocky Horror fan.
Yeah.
So I was tickled pink to see this pop up, you know, and have Hermsky go through it. I love this game. I love Rocky Horror. I'm not going to say I love the game. I love Rocky Horror, but this game is surprisingly in-depth.
Yeah, I think that they really, the people that made this really were fans of the stage show and or the film.
Yeah, yeah. And you've got to basically make the Medusa machine where you can turn your people back from stone in this and as you go through it. They could have ham and egg this one, Boatster, but they did not. So I think this is a good one. And of course, hey, once again, the Hermster is up and at him. So listen, you got to check that out. Rocky Horror, enough said. Yeah. Lastly, bringing up the rear, what a way to go out. It's our good buddy Frodo. Just that very first picture of Frodo in the penguin suit. I'm going to skip through here.
I didn't realize that was a thing he normally did. And what is this? And he's like, oh, yeah, I'm in the penguin suit constantly.
Here he is. This is, for those that care, this is the first year of the Sega Genesis, a.k.a. Mega Drive, 1989-1990. That itself would be awesome.
Mm-hmm.
But then someone cashed in the big bucks here and got Frodo into the penguin suit. I believe Frodo said he has just recently ordered a new penguin suit.
Mm.
So I don't know if this is the new one or if this is the old one.
I wonder what he's going to do with the old one.
Well, listen, I don't want to know, to be honest with you. You never know. But if you want to watch Frodo play 3.5 hours of sweet Genesis action from year one. You know, it's funny. I don't think much about the first year of the Genesis. God only knows what they got.
Showing, it sure looks pretty impressive.
Yeah, I was just thinking.
The Genesis was pretty hot out of the gate, if I recall correctly.
It was. And I'm assuming the Japanese side of things they brought a lot of stuff with them. I don't know when it was released in Japan versus when it was. You know, it's funny with Nintendo, you know, but with Sega, you never know what they're doing. They're doing all kinds of crazy stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, Boat, that's all we got this week, but still some fun stuff. Check it out if you will.
Yeah, yeah. And over on the Discord channel, we've got high score competitions going on for both. Attic Attack, I believe, is still going on, as well as Hybris, Aaron. Hybris.
I got to get in on that before it closes, because that's a game I can make a little hay in now.
Yeah, yeah. Now, before we wrap things up, I do want to take a quick second and thank all the fine folks that support our show by subscribing on Twitch. As always, if you have an Amazon Prime subscription, you could support the show for free, and it still benefits us by using that Prime sub on Twitch. And you can join the following fine group of people: Macintosh Librarian, Mitsuyama, Pints and Amiga, Below Jellyfish, Eeyore 4077, Da Crabs, MTG, Scumboy, Frodo NL, Jason Warns, Peeplo, Orom, Jigglebox, Beachbum 7, Retro Jerry, Super Famiking, Lord Soup, Uber Scuba Diver, Jost 80, Chris Edwards Restoration, Captain Chaos DK, Amy Steph, The Slow Norris, Amiga Live, Math Dufort, Still Adolescing, Buck Owens, Dave Velociraptor, Retro Rewind.ca, X Blipblop, Edvin Helland, JKDK, Rob O'Hara, Gary Heather, John Marshall 3, Great Al G, and Blue Train.
Thank you.
Now, Aaron, our last Patreon song challenge was the one, the only, Hey Now by Oasis. This is a pretty deep album cut. I didn't expect a lot of people to get this one because this wasn't a hit. I'm slowly working my way through every song on What's the Story, Morning Glory. That's the ultimate goal. We only got a couple responses on this one. Paul Kitching, Paul Marfleet, Mitsuyama, Chris Folds. I believe every single one of those people was in the UK where Oasis are worshipped.
They got all gods. All those guys got that? That's stunning to me. Stunning. Yeah.
All right. Now, Aaron, this week's Patreon Song Challenge is a real barn burner. If you know it, send me a message at john@amigospodcast.com, and I will announce you as the winner next week. Hit it.
Phantom Magnus, Seth the Eighth Elves her fiend, Christian Russell, David Z, George Rosansky. the Mega Show. Daniel Crabtree, Super Famicky, Crazy Loomis, William Van Star, Heavy Systems Inc. Albert Boyle and Dane Denson, Luke Hudson, John Cook, Bomba Bass, Frodo and L, Solon Sizer, Tech Mage, Jurgen, Mr. Cola, Daniel Williams, Bernard Lucas, Jeremy Nixon, Zorglove Reflections, on Ledge, Captain Chris. Kilobytes and caffeine, kilobytes and caffeine. Gary had a free lunch. Kane Park, David, Pick for Cameron, David, Pick for Andy Jones, Lost Terminator. 10 minute Amigo Retrocast, Bernard Quinn, RMC, Tim Drew, Simon Rose, Joseph Harrison, Kyle Edwards, Bob O'Hara, Matthew Larimore, Andy Crash, Hansel Barkley, Roland Berg, Andrew Monks, Joe the Zombie, Makelon, Alec and Bob, Checote, Level Lord, John Marshall, Matthew Perron, Ricky DeRosha, Creepy Dead Boy, Pinky CTZ, The Slow. Stefan Sorgard Mortensen, Edwin Helen, Linda 75, Christopher Hosofo, Randy Abbott, Chris Fong, Chris Fong, Lauren Drew, and P. Adam Lee, Battersby, O'Brien, O'Brien's Red Room 50, Red Room 50, Gary Hucker,
That was appalling.
If you know that, please send me an email at john@amigospodcast.com and I will answer on, or I will announce your name as a winner on next week's show. Graham on the drums, Lobsterminator on the C64 synthesizer.
Pretty cool, eh? Yeah, that was cool.
All right. So we're going to close things out. Thank you guys so much for being here. Next week, it's Modern Amiga Week. We are Modern Amiga Gaming Week. We're going to play Alcocopter, Aaron. Have you played any Alcocopter before?
Is that a copter that is fueled by alcohol?
I hope so. I hope so. Yeah. So that's going to do it for this week. We will see you guys next time. Until then, adios.